Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Ship to Shore Radio. Radio.
Hello, everyone. We are on Ship to Shore Radio. The captain, Frankendred, is not going to be with us tonight, so I am Ken from Jersey, and we're going to have Evil Rob coming on a little bit later. Tonight's guest is trap rock artist, singer, songwriter, Gary Phillips. So we're going to play some of his music. He's going to tell you where he's going to be playing, and we'll find out a little bit about him. So, Gary, how you doing tonight?
Good, Ken. How are you?
Oh, good.
Listening to the wind howl here on the ocean.
Looking forward to seeing you. We'll be down at the party on Saturday, so I'll be seeing you play live, which I've seen you play, you know, a lot of times already.
Mm-hmm.
Any other big events you have coming up? We can start right out. If you want to get your website out there, anything you have coming up.
Well, sure. My website is www.garyphillips.net, and I have a couple of big events coming up in April. One is a cruise for a cure with the Jersey Shore Parrot Head Club. I'll be playing on that along with Crawdaddy. That's the 15th to the 22nd of April, and it's reasonably priced, it's out of Baltimore. And it goes to the Caribbean, and people say, "Where in the Caribbean are you going?" And my answer to that is always, "Who cares?" You know,
yeah.
You know, we're going to be in the sun. The nice thing about that is there'll be a bus going from New Jersey down to Baltimore, so you don't even have to, you know, for the local folks, you don't even have to drive to Baltimore. So that'll be nice, and that's all included in the price of the price that they're charging. And then the following weekend, the 26th, 27th, 28th, and 29th, is the 4th Annual Spring Fling down in Wildwood. And that's always a blast. And I'm not sure exactly who's going to be there, but I'm pretty sure Homemade Wine, Jimmy and the Parrots, the Goombas, John Friday, Swim Skinny, Chris Sachs, Dave Werkheiser. It's a pretty big... pretty good lineup.
Yeah, I was down at that last year. It was pretty good. I'll be there again this year. I had never gone to it, only because for me, it's like a three-hour ride from where I am. And I'm thinking, you know, then a good buddy of mine, John Friday, was going to be there last year. So I said, let me go check it out. It's definitely worth it.
Homemade wine is
fabulous.
Most of the other events you go to are a day or two. This is 4 days.
Yeah, it's a really, really good event. It's well run. It's definitely worth checking out.
It's going to be at a different venue this year. Only about a block from where last year's was, but it will be. It's a much better venue because it's not. The public won't be allowed in, and that was an issue last year.
Yeah, that was it was kind of crazy because you had people, and it got confusing too because they had daily passes. This year it's one pass only, and you had people coming in all different days who didn't have passes for that day. Like you said, you had the public coming in. Everybody was kind of getting upset about that because, you know, we were paying for admission and people were walking in and off the street. But
right,
I understand this is going to be a private entrance, so it's just going to be us. I know they sell, I think, 300 tickets or 300 registrations, and I think it did sell out last year. So it's I got mine already because I definitely want to go check this out. I understand you're going to be at the Coastal Club's party with Tall Paul and Jimmy and the Parrots also at the Sawmill.
That's right. I forgot all about that one.
Yeah,
I guess because it's my own club. You know, you don't think about it as much. But yeah, that's the 11th of February. The unfortunate thing about that is it's the same day as the Metro's winter frosted. And so a lot of the Long Island people who would normally come in for that won't be coming in. So that's too bad, but it's going to be a great event. Once again, the venue is really nice, right on the water. So it'll be fun. And the night before that, and I won't be involved because I have a gig somewhere else the night before, is they're going to be doing a songwriter thing with Jimmy and Tall Paul. So that'll be a nice little just kind of warm up for the people who are local.
I remember last year's. It was just like a driving downpour rain all day. And the one thing with the sawmill, the windows aren't sealed too tight. We had a table by the windows.
Oh.
Oh, my God. We had to put coats on. It was freezing.
Oh. Yeah, I wasn't even at last year. I had another gig last year, so I couldn't even make last year's. But because I'm emceeing and I'll be playing it this year's, I guess I'll be there. And I will probably donate a three-hour party, a house concert, as one of the raffle gifts for this year.
Oh, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, I did that for the New Hope Foundation event last September, and Sally Mellett out of Delaware won it. So I was down there the 7th. And 3 hours turned into, I started about 8:30 and I finished around 2 in the morning. I did part of it electric and then went downstairs with just my guitar and just played for another, 3 or 4 hours, whatever it turned out to be. But it was a lot of fun.
I think that might have been one of the first times I'd seen you play was at a New Hope Foundation event. It was either that or I might have seen you at Kathmandu. Again, it was probably a Coastal Club event with Jim Morris and the guys who were there.
Okay, yeah, and that was probably, if it was Jim Morris and the guys at Kathmandu, it was probably a New Hope thing. I've done a couple of things at Kathmandu, and probably the first time I played there, the first time I really played at a large venue, Trop Rock, was at Kathmandu, and that was the thing that DJ Jeff had run. Oh, and that's got to be 5 years ago, and I played at that, and I don't even remember what it was. He ran, it was for the Amish Club. And,
oh, was that a Peter Mayer and Scott Kirby?
No, that was, I played at that one also. I opened for them on that one, and I guess that wasn't, I don't know who ran that one, but I did open on that one too, yeah.
We need more Trop Rock events up in this area. You know, it's nice you play around. I fact that we popped down to see you play not that long ago. I see all my Florida friends, and when the clubs, the Coastal Club or any of the clubs here do something, it's usually a Kathmandu, and it's not a lot of things where I see all my friends in Florida always every weekend. Who's at the Navigator? Who's at the Yard? And I get kind of jealous sometimes. That's why you got to take advantage of the shows that are up here. So, anybody who's looking to get tickets, we can probably post the some of the websites for Spring Fling and the Mardi Gras Coastal Party on the 11th.
Right. And then in May, our club is holding the Feeding Frenzy, and that's going to be at Kathmandu. And I want to say it's May 15th, but don't hold me to that date. I know it's in May sometime, and Homemade Wine's going to be playing at that.
I think that it's the 18th. It's a Saturday afternoon.
The 18th?
Yes, I think the 18th, it's a Saturday.
I know it's around it's in the middle of the month. I'm actually looking at my calendar now. It would have to be 19th is a Saturday. So I guess it's the 19th.
Okay, yeah, it was a Saturday, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it would be either the 12th or the 19th. Those are the two Saturdays, in the middle of the month. And I'm going to say the 19th because the other one would make it really too close to the Spring Fling. Not that that really matters.
Yeah, I should. I'm trying to think of the charity that the fundraiser is for. I really should have researched this because it's actually my wife's cousin, Christine. It's charity. They picked her charity to actually use that as the fundraiser for her.
Oh. Yeah, as I said, I don't even have it on my calendar yet because I don't know, you know, come May, what my schedule is going to be like.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of, you know, unless they ask me to play, so I don't know if I'll be there, you know, I'll be there or not. But that's going back to the Mardi Gras, the charity for that's a real good cause, something that's real close to me. It's Holiday Express. And if you're not familiar with Holiday Express, basically it's a group of volunteers. This year it was a total of about 1,600 volunteers, 100 of them being musicians. And basically between Thanksgiving and Christmas, we travel all over and do shows for mentally disabled, physically disabled, soup kitchens, veterans homes. And in that 30 days, the group does 55 shows. And I was lucky enough to be able to do 41 of them this year.
Wow.
Yeah, but it's just a great cause. Every place they go, they feed the people. Every person at every event gets a gift. So it's really heartwarming stuff to do.
Yeah, I saw you post some of the stuff on Facebook, and between that and you're very busy with regular, you know, gigs up in this area, Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
You know, when I say Jersey Shore, I mean the Jersey Shore that we know, not Snooki's Jersey Shore.
It's always funny when you say, "Oh yeah, I'm from the Jersey Shore," and people look at you kind of strange.
Then they walk on the boardwalk, and I thought this was funny. I saw this last year. Actually, when we were down at the Mardi Gras, we were walking around. There was a sign. It said, "Home of the Snooki Sandwich."
Oh.
And I'm thinking, what the heck could a Snooki Sandwich be? And it was the place was closed because it was February, and the boardwalk was pretty much closed up. But I actually went home and Googled it and said, let me see what comes up. And it actually had a whole list of things about this Snooki Sandwich, and it had a picture of the place that I saw, so I know it was the one that came from there. It was white bread with Nutella, fluff, and it was deep fried. It was dipped in eggs and deep fried. Now we know why Snooki looked like she did.
Yeah, I'm surprised there weren't any pickles on it, because she's a big pickle eater.
I must be one of the few people in New Jersey. I've never watched that show. I've seen maybe a minute here, a minute there. We're flipping the channels around, or if we're at somebody's house and they're changing the channels, and we'll stop on it for a second. But I don't watch that.
Yeah, I mean, usually I'll be once again flipping through the channels, and it'll be on, you know, at 11 o'clock at night, and not the regular, you know, the regular night of it. And so I'll watch a little bit of it, and it's just amazing, you know. And you watch it sometimes because you're just familiar with all the places they're talking about.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's like the when the Sopranos were on. You know, the best part of the Sopranos, or any part of, you know, the beginning of it, where they're showing them, you know, on the turnpike and, you know, going through Bloomfield and North Arlington and all the places that, gee, I've passed there, I know that place, I've been there. And even, you know, as they were filming it, they talk about places that you're just familiar with, being from New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I know this past fall, you played quite a bit down at MOTM. Like, I actually saw you on the Willie T's webcam one afternoon with John Friday.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I sat in with John down there. You know, my goal for next year is to really, because I sat in with a lot of people and I had a couple of gigs myself, but, you know, I'd really like to do some more playing down there on my own and trying to figure out how to book that stuff, or even just how to book, you know, some of these other events that these other clubs are running. You know, there's one up in Buffalo this summer that I'd like to play at. I'm just looking at an email, and there's one actually in Delaware, I guess sometime this spring. So, you know, I'm really not sure, you know, if you just have to be a real nudge and just keep bothering people, then, yeah, you know, I want to play, and finally they, you know, it's like everything else, the squeaky wheel makes the most noise or whatever, it gets the most oil, I don't know.
I really like that idea down in Key West with the webcams, because unfortunately I wasn't there. I was actually down part of that week for Halloween weekend, but I my job doesn't allow me to take a whole week off during the school year because I work at a school.
Right.
But the webcams are just so cool. I watched a couple of them. I saw the Smoke and Tuna Saloon had their cam on when Jim Morris and the band were playing.
Yeah.
And if, for anybody who played at Willie T's, it was constant, like, music. It was really, for somebody who couldn't be there, it was the next best thing.
Yeah, well, Facebook also helps that out, too, because, you know, people just take videos, and, you know, you can watch videos all day long of people from, any, you know, everywhere. So some of these social networks have really done a lot to spread the music. You know, unfortunately, it hasn't spread as much to New Jersey as you would think.
That's true. It just seems like we need a place like the Navigator where you can just have like that trap rock kind of, you know, a little, just something to start, because they really have some awesome people playing down on a regular basis. And that's a place where you get a big crowd, and like you said with the social networking, there's always pictures, videos. I could probably go through Facebook and find, you know, from Jim Marr, Sonny Jim Frenzy. I know Howard Livingston is going to be there this week, and there's always somebody there filming certain songs and in a post thing, and it's just nice to be able to see, you know.
Yeah, you know, you're right. It's surprising. I mean, obviously down there because of the weather, they can be outdoors, all year round. But you would think some of the bars along the shore that do stay open, would look for
something,
a regular draw. But you know, you mentioned trop rock, and you know, in this area, and people look at you like you're crazy. You know, they have down here, you know, Asbury Park is, you know, the center of music down here. And I'm constantly, they have the Asbury Park Music Awards, and, you know, as soon as they start with those, I say, well, you know, you don't have trop rock as a genre. And obviously they had trop rock as a genre down here. I'm probably in Monmouth County the only trop rock musician other than maybe Vinny Lopez.
Yeah.
So it would be self-serving for me if they did. But, you know, everything down here is still Springsteen and Bon Jovi and, you know, the rock guys.
Yeah. I got some of your music here. We can play some of your stuff and let people hear, you know, what you're all about.
Okay.
I'm gonna give you a list of the songs that I have here. Maybe you want to tell me which one you want me to play, and maybe we can listen to it. And you can, you know, tell us a little about the song. I love listening to your stuff because it's sure, like beach oriented. It kind of, when you hear it, especially for me, it kind of reminds me of the Jersey Shore, and also I spend a lot of time in Florida, so I like the beach.
Right.
So your kind of stuff really is I can relate to it, you know. And somebody who's into trop rock and is a, you know, a beach person that really can appreciate it. Now we have I guess we can play Living the Life of a Beach Bum. We'll play that. We'll take a little break and then. We'll get right back as soon as this song is over. This is Ship to Shore Radio with our special guest, Gary Phillips. And this is Living the Life of a Beach Bum.
Gonna hang out at the Jersey Shore, where there are pretty girls galore. Soaking up the warm summer sun. maybe move to the West Coast, where Cali girls are really the most. Living the life of a beach bum, with an ice cold beer in my hand, not really having a plan. Ocean breeze blowing through my hair, watch the sun rise over the ocean and set at Mallory Square. I live in the life of a beach bum. I just wanna take a life real slow. I listen to beachfront radio, singing and a banging on my drum, laying in the sand, working on my tan, living the life of a beach bum. I gotta stop this hectic pace, ain't gonna win the race. Have to start to walk and not run. Take life easy for a while. I no more frowns, I just got to smile. I live in the life of a beach bum. Listen to some trop rock sounds with this new freedom I found. A surfing and sailing, having lots of fun. Don't wanna be a star, I just wanna sing and play my guitar. I live in the life of a beach bum. Just wanna take life real slow. I listen to beachfront radio, singing and a banging on my drum, laying in the sand, working on my tan, living the life of a beach bum. Living life without a care, it's always 5 o'clock somewhere. A shot of tequila and some rum, listen to the sound of the waves, ain't gonna be anybody's slave. I live in the life of a beach bum. I just wanna take life real slow, listen to beachfront radio, singing and a banging on my drum, laying in the sand, working on my tan, living the life of a beach bum. I just wanna take life real slow. I listen to beachfront radio, I singing and a banging on my drum, laying in the sand, working on my tan, living the life of a beach bum. Living the life of a beach bum. Living the life of a beach bum.
By Gary Phillips. How you come up with, like, what's the motivation, the writing procedure for coming up with, like, when you come up with your songs? Do you take it from, like, your days on the beach, or, you know, your upbringing in New Jersey and, you know, the Jersey Shore type thing?
There's a lot of different motivations. That beach bum is something that I wrote, and I probably wrote that in about 10, 15 minutes. you know, it's I'd actually had my hours cut down at work, and I said, well, what am I going to do? And I said, you know, it'd really be fun to be a beach bum. And I sat down, and I said, okay, well, bum, and I started rhyming words with the word bum. And I started there, and just came up with that. And, you know, I have Beachfront Radio mentioned on there because I figured it's a good way to get some airtime.
Yeah, I hear that quite often. That was a good marketing strategy.
Yeah. So it was, you know, that particular song was one that just kind of came to me. And, you know, like I said, it was about a 15-minute write on the lyrics, and then the music was kind of simple. And I was playing it one day, and I said, because I wrote it on my guitar, and I said, you know, this would sound really good on the ukulele. And I went into the studio, and we had a ukulele hanging up, and I'd never played the ukulele before. And I fooled around with it for about 15 minutes, and I said, okay, this sounds like the chords I want to play, and ended up recording it on the ukulele. So that's you know, that was recorded on the ukulele, and I had a friend of mine sit with do some keyboard work. And then I don't know if you know Alan Jax Bowers.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he the percussion on that, I sent everything up to him, and he added the percussion to it and sent it back down to me. And that will be probably the title track of my CD, which hopefully will be done by April, if I can get my butt into the studio.
And when that is done, they can go to your website and get that through your website, or how can they find that?
Well, probably it'll be, there'll be a link on my website probably to the Beachfront site.
Okay.
And they can, they can download it there. That song is actually already on the Beachfront site as a bonus track on my first CD, Tropical Island Dream. And when I redid that, I added as a hidden bonus track, Beach Bum, on there. But I've got four songs pretty much done for the next CD, and I've got the basic stuff done on the rest of it. And so it's a matter of, you know, the hard part is, okay, now what instrumentation do I want, and, you know, who do I want to play? And the more I listen to stuff, I say, you know, when I go out and play, I don't play with a band. So for me to put a whole lot of other stuff up there, really, it doesn't be, it's not, you know, it's not what you're listening to. So I try to keep everything relatively simple. So I don't think I'll have a problem getting it done for April. And I told Tracy that I was going to be doing a CD release at the Spring Fling.
Oh, that'd be
so
nice.
So I guess I have to have it done.
Yeah. I did see you with a band one time, actually at Monmouth Park Racetrack. You guys are playing out on the lawn area.
Right. We play together once or twice a year. And we play at the Belmar Fishing Club. They have a Jimmy Buffett night. And 3 years ago, Jimmy and the Parrots played at it. And the guy who runs the music over there said, because I played there as a solo, he goes, you happen to have a band? And I said, yeah, I can put a band together, you know. So we've been playing there for the last couple of years for their Jimmy Buffett day. So I guess I stole a gig from Jimmy and the Parrots. I don't know. Yeah, so we'll do that. And actually, at various times, I'll have different people come and join me, depending on where I'm at. Tomorrow night, I'm playing at a local bar, and I'm going to have a bass guitar join me. And you see, I don't know if you've been to any of the happy hours where I've had Jax playing with me, his percussion. And I want to do some more stuff with John Haney on the harp.
I've seen you with Jax at Cheeseburger in Paradise.
That's right, yeah. We did... And when they had live music there, we played there. But they stopped.
I don't know what's up with that place. It seems like it must be as a chain overall, because they do mess with the music a lot. Because I know John Friday used to be a regular at the Cheeseburger in Paradise in Fort Myers, and all of a sudden they went from, you know, solo artist, and they wanted a full band. And you know what the Cheeseburger in Paradise look like. You put a full band in there, you're gonna blow people away.
Yeah, it's really not, and at least the ones up here are not really suited for, you know, they're more family places.
Yes, yes.
You're not, you know, band's not going to bring in a big crowd, I don't think, but you never know. But I think it's more up to the managers.
Yeah, yeah.
The Cheeseburger in Paradise, there's the one up in Wayne and the one in Sea Caucus, and they don't have anything at all.
No?
And no.
Well, I know another place that we go a lot down in Fort Myers, and it's a dinner place, but they have a big outdoor deck, and they actually just built one here in Jersey. It's Bahama Breeze.
Bahama Breeze, yeah. There's actually one up in Wayne also. It's funny you mention it, because I've been pulling my hair out, and for those of you who know me, no, I don't have any hair. trying to get in touch with them. You go to their I actually stopped at the one in Wayne, and they say that it's all hired through corporate. And you go to the website, and it says musicians, you know, if you're interested in playing, you know, and there's a link there, and it sends out an email, but it never goes through. So it always comes back. They're out of Florida. Same people who own, they own, you know, it's the kind of like they own a few different places, just like.
Yeah, is it the Olive Garden? There were four places that they own.
Yeah, yep, yeah. Just like Cheeseburger in Paradise is also, they also own Bonefish Grill.
Yeah, and in fact, you see a lot of them side by side. The Cheeseburger in Paradise in Jersey here in Island has
right.
a Bonefish Grill next to it. And actually the new Bahama Breeze it was just open. It was October 28th it was open. And right next door is a new Olive Garden. They both opened the same
week. Okay. Yeah, I knew they opened because they opened the day I left for Key West, which was why I know. Knew when they opened.
They don't have entertainment there. I know two people that went, and I asked them if, you know, what kind of stuff do they have there, and actually there was no live entertainment, unless they're just going to do it in the summer.
Well, that's what the one up in Wayne does. They just have it in the summer.
You see, I'm used to Florida, where it's pretty much summer all year round, and we'll hang out, and I don't know if you know Dave Lapio. Jim Morris, an old steel drum player?
No.
He plays there on a regular basis, and on a couple times a year, they'll have John Patti all pop in there and play. But
yeah, if you look, because there's one down in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and one in Cherry Hill also, and they have music all year round, those two. But it's the same people all the time. You know, same people, you know, Monday night, it's the same guy every Monday night, same guy every Tuesday night,
you know.
So, you know, I guess they've got their regulars in there, and it's like any place else. They have their regulars, and that's what they go with.
So do you have, like, a local schedule? What do you have coming up on your regular, you know, New Jersey schedule? You want to tell people where you might be, so anybody from this area that's listening might want to... So check your Facebook page or just, you know, pop in.
Yeah, tomorrow night, actually, they check my regular website. My calendar's always up on there. Tomorrow night I'm going to be at MJ's Bar in Tinton Falls. Saturday afternoon I'll be at the Rum Runner for the Coastal Jersey Parrothead membership meeting. And I'm going to have some other musicians there with me on Saturday. I'm not exactly sure who yet, but there'll be some other musicians coming in to join me. And then Saturday night up at the Tap House in the Highlands, which is, I guess, the last time I saw you.
Yeah, so we drove up and saw you up there, yeah.
Yeah, I'll be there Saturday night. And then that brings us to the following weekend. And actually, I've got nothing booked for the following weekend yet. I'll probably end up playing at Jackson Belmar that following weekend. And then the 31st, I'm at MJ's in Middletown. The 2nd, I'm at the Captain's Inn down in Forked River. The 3rd, I'm out at Big Woody's in Allentown. And the 4th, I'm somewhere the fourth, but I don't remember where.
Is that Allentown, New Jersey, or Allentown, Pennsylvania?
Well, Allentown, Pennsylvania. I'm sorry, yeah.
A lot of people don't know this in Allentown, New Jersey. I only know because my brother lives there.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I drive past there on off of 195.
Yeah.
And let's see. Actually, February 4th, I've got nothing booked. Then the 10th, I'm back at the Tap House. The 11th is the Mardi Gras. Schedule's starting to fill up. I've been talking to so many different people about stuff for the summer. And, it's a matter of just finalizing some stuff. I'll be doing, regularly down at the Captain's Inn at their Tiki Bar this summer. The Water's Edge has a Tiki Bar there in Seabright, and I've talked to them about possibly doing Sundays there. Boondocks and Red Bank, I will be there during the summer. I'll do some stuff out of Big Woody's out either in Easton or in Allentown over the summer. So, hopefully I'll be back down in Wildwood every week during the summer, too. So, I'll be driving all over.
let's play another song. This one is called The Jersey Shore. We'll listen to this, and then we'll be right back. This is Ship to Shore Radio with Ken from Jersey filling in for the captain with our special guest, Gary Phillips. This is called Jersey Shore.
Saturday morning, sitting around, wishing I wasn't here. Papers read, the coffee's gone, sun's up, the coast is clear. The kids are all grown up now, living on their own. I'm sitting here in my emptiness, living all alone. The years they pass too quickly, but life's been good to me. I've climbed the highest mountains, I've sailed the seven seas. Seems like every beginning begins where it ends. Full circle came one evening, visiting an old friend. Surfer girls from the surf shops, they make you feel alright. Hanging ten in your flip flops on the boardwalk late at night. Don't matter if you're young or old, no worries anymore. Each day begins and unfolds right here on the Jersey Shore. Something's been missing lately, not sure what it might be. So I'm heading on down the parkway to see what I can see. Driving down the coastline from Keensburg to Cape May. Top down on the Mustang, an Indian summer day. Memories came flashing back, singing old familiar sounds. Younger days not long ago, here in these beachfront towns. Don't care where I'm going, it don't matter this time around. No more living on the fast track, my world's just spinning round. Surfer girls from the surf shop, they make you feel alright. Hanging ten in your flip flops on the boardwalk late at night. Don't matter if you're young or old, no worries anymore. Each day begins and unfolds right here on the Jersey Shore. By sunset, I'd forgotten what I could not recall before. that something that was missing did not matter anymore. When, much to my surprise, hiding behind the door, right before my very eyes, just living on the Jersey Shore. Surfing girls from the surf shops, they make you feel alright. Hanging ten in your flip-flops on the boardwalk late at night. Don't matter if you're young or old, no worries anymore. Each day begins and unfolds right here on the Jersey Shore.
Okay, we're back. That was Jersey Shore by Gary Phillips. Gary's a Jersey guy, and that's an appropriate song title. Any, how did you come up with that tune?
Well, I will be 100% honest. The only thing I wrote on that was the music. And I write a lot of stuff with a friend of my old college buddy, high school buddy. I'm not even college, from Arizona. And oddly enough, we graduated high school in 19. I won't say when, but about 5 years ago, we had a reunion. Actually, it was 4 years ago, and it was the first reunion my class has ever had. It was our 37th year since graduation. We kind of, you know, as emails are going back and forth, we said, well, let's do something to honor our classmates who have passed away. And so some ideas flew back and forth, and he and I wrote a song, and it's on the CD, Empty Chairs, in the spotlight. But that song is actually his description of his landing at Newark Airport, renting a car, driving down the Jersey Shore, and then driving back up. To put it in a nutshell, you know, being from northern Jersey, we both grew up in Bergen County. We would drive down the shore on weekends or, you know, whatever. So, you know, it's kind of revisiting his past. So that's where that came from. So he said, you know, he sent me lyrics, and I said, no, I've got some music floating around in my head for this, and so that's how that came about. Now, you know, he'll send me stuff, and I'll make some lyric changes to them to fit a little bit better, or in some cases, like one of the songs on there, La Vida Bien, which is about going to Key West and whatever. When he sent it to me originally, it was about Mexico, and I said, well, Phil, you live in Arizona, so Mexico is, you know, something that you can kind of associate with. I said, I've never been to Mexico, but I've been to Key West, so I'm going to rewrite this, you know, take all your ideas and rewrite it and make it more Key West, you know, something that I can kind of associate myself with, which makes it easier for me to sing. So that's how that goes. And we've done a lot of stuff like that. I'll get an idea, and I'll say, hey, Phil, you know what? It'd be a good idea to a song about and whatever. And I might send him an email. If I sent him an email now, when I wake up tomorrow morning, there'd be a set of lyrics for me. And he's just, you know, that's just the way he works. So yeah, he, you know, a lot of that stuff, the lyrics are his on. I guess on that one, on that CD, Tropical Island Dreaming was one that I wrote completely. Living the Life of the Beach Bum is one I wrote completely. 5 o'clock Dawn was one of mine. You know, Empty Chairs was kind of both of ours. A few of the others were kind of both of ours, and a couple of them are completely his. So, you know, it's a nice collaboration we have going.
Well, that's good. when two people can, you know, get together and, you know, compliment each other, it's a, you know, good thing. I guess I'm just amazed at the writing. Like, I hear so many good songs, and it's like sometimes you think, well, I wonder if I could write a song. And I like trying to put ideas together. I can barely, you know, it's just a lost cause.
You know what the thing is, I've been working on a song. I play at the guy's house down in Point Pleasant during the summer, and I'll play there three or four times, and Frenzy will play there once or twice, usually once during the summer. This guy's girlfriend, they have an ice luge at all of his parties, and his girlfriend basically is in charge of pouring the shots. And I said, you know, I'm going to write a song about her and the ice luge. And, you know, I wrote something out, and I sent it to my buddy, and he sent something back, which I really wasn't crazy about because it just didn't kind of fit the feeling. And, you know, obviously sometimes, you know, you just get a feeling of things when you're there. And but, you know, I've wrestled with it for months now because I'm trying to make it, like, perfect. And get all of these little and then you listen to some stuff. I say, you know what, it doesn't have to. If I can convey just the idea, then that's really all it needs. You know, I don't need six verses to do it. You know,
yeah,
I can do three. And I know it's something, and I fall into that trap all the time. Is it's not enough. It's not enough. It's not enough. Well, I think what I'm trying to do is too much.
Yeah. I guess if a song is too long, after a while it starts to get drawn out. You don't want to have like a CD full of like Grateful Dead jams or Grateful Dead tunes. You know, you could put a Grateful Dead CD and listen to it for like a day and a half and it wouldn't end.
Yeah. And I guess my problem is one of my one of the people I listened to a lot when I was growing up was not when I was growing up. I was obviously grown when Harry Chapin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Harry Chapin was a storyteller. And,
yeah.
You know, most of his songs are 7-8 minutes long, you know, his good ones. I guess I kind of get caught to that storytelling kind of Harry Chapin kind of thing from time to time. Getting back to my original point is I have to learn to keep things short and to the point. And if you can get a good chorus, you know, something that, like Beach Bum was a perfect example. I'll play that at a bar, and people will be singing the chorus along with me halfway through the song, you know, because it's just got that catchy tune to it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, everything obviously doesn't work that way, but, it is what it is. And so you keep pounding away, and you keep writing stuff down and throwing stuff out and... trial and error, hit and miss.
Let's play another one. You said you wrote by yourself 5 O'Clock Dawn. Do you want to give a quick rundown of that, how you came up with that, and then we'll play it?
Sure. I had a dog, and I used to take her out in the morning, and it was a little early than 5 o'clock. It was a little later than 5 o'clock, but 5 o'clock just kind of fit a little bit better. And basically, it was, you know, I would take the dog out for a walk, and the different things you see in the morning when you're walking the dog. That's really all it is. And I actually even had put together like a little slideshow presentation showing some of the different things. You know, people fishing, the fishing boats, the joggers, the moon. You know, the moon still up and the sun coming up. You know, so I had some fun with it from a visual point of view too.
Okay, so we're going to listen to this song right now. This is Gary Phillips' 5 O'Clock Dawn.
When the dawn arrives at 5 o'clock, the night songs still fill the air. Hearts warm with the sun's first ray. Early morning time of day. Like the starlight in a twinkling eyes, with an ocean breeze of cool fresh air. Every day arrives without a care. When the dawn arrives at 5 o'clock, listen closely to her. tropical rock. The fishing boat's still at the dock when the dawn arrives at 5 o'clock. The joggers on their morning run, pancakes on the griddle will soon be done. Early morning risers walking their pets. This life is as good as it gets. The rising sun is soon ablaze, burning through the morning haze. A peaceful moment, the calm of now. I'm gonna hold the day some way, somehow. When the dawn arrives at 5 o'clock, I listen closely to her tropical rock. The fishing boat's still at the dock when the dawn arrives at 5 o'clock.
Gary Phillips, another one of his songs off his CD, Tropical Island Dreaming. You can find that by going to his website, and then it'll redirect you to the Beachfront Beach Hut Music Store, and you can download the whole album. You can download songs. You can listen to samples, and you know, pick what you like. So you have a live CD that's going to be out, hopefully in time for Spring Fling. That's when
the live CD was actually done for
the new
Meeting
CD,
of the Pines.
The new CD you're hoping to get out by Spring Fling. That's yeah.
Right. Yeah. 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 The live CD I did over the summer, and actually it was one of those things that just kind of happened. I played on Wednesday nights at the American Hotel in Freehold, and we were in the middle of September, and this one guy said, you know, you really should record this stuff. You could probably sell these, you know, especially here, like crazy. And so the next week I just plugged I've got a little recorder. I plugged it into the house system and just let it run. And it just came out well, you know, and there was nothing that could be mixed on it. So what you hear on it is truly what I sound like live, I guess.
Truly live, not touched up. I know.
There's nothing touched on it at all, not even to the fact where as we're performing, you know, you got somebody who's mixing stuff. That's truly exactly the way it sounded. And I was very fortunate to play over the summer with a gentleman named Steve Lucas. I played guitar with me. And Steve played with the late Les Paul when Les was alive, and now he plays with Les's son. And he had a ball doing it. He goes. He just enjoyed playing the trop rock music because it's so different from what he normally does. You know, the jazz and blues stuff.
The
guitar work is just phenomenal. And actually, on one of the songs, I forget which one it was on there, but somebody said to me, a trop rock fan, obviously, he goes, boy, that sounds just like Dave Edmondson, who plays with Scott Kirby.
Yes, yes.
And I said, yeah, you know what? It does sound like him. But it was just, you know, it was just a real good experience. And, you know, I liked the way it came out, so I, out of the 30 songs I recorded, I took 14 of them and put them on the CD.
Yeah, I've noticed on your schedule, like your Jersey schedule, you obviously have to be very well liked because you have a set schedule. It seems like you play the same places on a steady basis. I know other artists that bounce around and, you know, this gig ends here and they're moving around. You got a very steady, seems like a very steady bass.
I do. I've got, you know, there's four or five places that, you know, in the summer especially, you know, in the summer, last summer I was Monday nights at the Clam Hut, Wednesday nights at the hotel, Thursday down in Wildwood. Fridays and Sundays I was at Boondocks and Red Bank. And then Saturdays I kind of jumped around to wherever. But even now, during the winter, there's Jackson Belmar and Tap House, the Captain's Inn, and I'm trying to think, there must be one or two other places that, you know, I'm there once a month, sometimes twice a month, you know, so, and they like me there. Jackson Belmar, if I'm not playing, they don't have music.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, you know, I went in there one night, and Tequila Tom.
Yeah.
Right? Well, he was up, and he grew up in this area. He grew up in Neptune. And he was playing at Jack's one night, and I stopped in, and I got up and played a couple of songs. And the owner there said, oh, would you like to play here? I said, yeah. And the people there just enjoyed it so much. We just have a good time. It's the same people there all the time. You know, it's really a local bar, and it's, you know, like the old Cheers where everybody knows your name.
Yeah.
There's no stage there. They throw a dozen cases of beer on the floor, a piece of plywood on top of that, and that's where I play. And I'm literally on the bar there. But it's just a good, just good vibes there and good people there. And it's a great place to go and just sit and, you know, have a couple of beers. The bartenders there are great. And it's a half mile from my house.
I can tell anybody if they go see you at the tap room to get the onion soup. It was really good.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I will tell the tell the people there that you enjoyed that. The tap room is a funny place. Now, you know, I'm there once a month. It's a strange setup there. You know, and you saw it there. I'm up on that balcony, and you know, at least when you were there were some people upstairs. The last time I was there was nobody upstairs at all. So, you know, I'm playing to the people downstairs, and, you know, my vision isn't that great to begin with, so I could barely see the people down there.
And you're looking down now, and it's like playing, you know, like you say, playing from a balcony.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and you lose that contact with people, and I enjoy that contact. I enjoy, you know, kibitzing with the people, and it's the one thing I don't like about there is that you don't have that connection with the crowd.
Yeah. I remember seeing you play one time at a New Hope thing when the show Peter Mayer was there, and you would play in between the sets, and you actually walked around almost like a roving minstrel. You know, that was, you couldn't get any more contact with people. It was kind of nice.
Yeah.
You didn't just, you know, we weren't just like in one spot. You kind of, you worked your way. It was a pretty big room, so it was you probably put a lot of miles in.
Yeah, and that all came about the summer before that. I was playing at this place, Boondocks in Red Bank, and I was all set up and playing, and a storm hit, and I got my equipment underneath just in time. But the wind kicked up, and it was like blowing food off the plates and stuff. And this is strictly an outdoor place. And it's in a marina, and they sent everybody to the garage where they work on the boats. And so everybody was in there. So I just went in there with my guitar, and I played a little acoustically in there. And then they got everything cleaned up outside, and they just kept the sides down. And I just walked around acoustically in there, and I said, you know, that was kind of fun. I said, so I went out and that week and spent $1,000 on wireless equipment, you know, microphone, guitar. You know, so depending on where I'm at and the type of place it is, I will use my wireless stuff. I'll usually, like, I will have at least my wireless guitar at the Mardi Gras because, you know, Jimmy and the Parrots are always wireless.
Yeah,
at least cars. So I will at least be wireless that way. The microphone thing is tough because, as you know, I use my harmonizer. But if I walk around too much, I can't kick that on and off. So, you know, I've got to temper how I use that and the music I do. And obviously the wireless mic doesn't pick up as well as you would like. You know, you can't change your dynamics as you can with a regular microphone. So I use that, but there are certain places where it just works real well.
We've got a few seconds left. Actually, we're a little bit over our time, but go ahead. Give us your website again. And so
the website is www.garyphillips.net. Okay, my schedule's on there. There's pictures on there. There's links to my Reverb Nation account where you can listen to some of my music on there. Some of my live stuff is on there, actually. And there's a link to the Beachfront site, to various sites. There's also some information on the cruise coming up in April on the Mardi Gras and on the Spring Fling.
Okay, so I hope everybody checks that out and, you know, can stop out and see Gary either at his local, you know, Jersey places here, his gigs here, or Spring Fling or the cruise or anything, any place he's going to be. It's been a quick hour. I can't believe an hour's gone by already.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way. I feel the same way.
If you like to hang around, we're going to go to Dreaded Sports Talk if you like to give a little sports opinion. But we got to sign off now. I want to thank you for coming on. This was fun. This is my first solo show. I didn't mess up the board.
Well, thank you for having me. It was fun. It's always fun to talk about my music and, you know, different stuff coming up and just trop rock music in general.
Yeah, should get it out in this area a little bit. Try and get some more people into it.
Yep. Yeah, I'm trying to educate. I was called a trop rock ambassador in an article last summer because I play not only my stuff and Buffett stuff, but I'll play Frenzy stuff and Sonny Jim and Jim Morris and Scott Kirby and Kelly McGuire and so I play by a lot of different people to try to just spread. It's not just Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, I can vouch. For Gary, he plays a wide range of trop rock music, and he's very good. So check out his website, and see where he's playing, and maybe buy some of his music. You can upload it or download it from the Beachfront site, Reverb Nation, and listen for yourself, and you'll see it's all very good. Okay,
yeah,
Gary,
they also would like a hard copy of my CDs. They can contact me on my website. And we can, I can make arrangements to send them a hard, an actual CD.
Okay, that sounds good. So hopefully, maybe when your new CD is ready, you can come back on and we can talk about that.
That'd be great.
Hopefully by, I don't want to put pressure on you, but hopefully by the end of April, around spring fling time.
I'll have it done by spring fling. I can promise that.
Okay. Okay, thanks again for coming on, Gary. This has been...
Hey, Kevin, I'll see you in a couple of weeks down at the Mardi Gras.
Yes. I'll see you Saturday.
Oh, I'll see you Saturday. That's right.
Yeah.
I'll see you on Saturday then.
Okay. This is...
Okay, Ken.
Ship to Shore Radio. Thanks for listening, everyone.
You're listening to Ship to Shore Radio. Radio. It's time for
Dreaded Sports Talk.
Treaded.
Sports Talk.
That's right. Welcome to another episode of Dreaded Sports Talk. I am Evil Rob. I'm sitting here with Ken from Jersey. And Ken, you just got done with one hell of a fun hour. You had Gary Phillips on over on the Ship to Shore Network. And luckily, he's agreed to stick around with us for a little while. So, Gary, I'd like to welcome you to the Dreaded Sports Talk Hour.
Well, thank you. A lot of people dread sports, I think.
Exactly, and a lot of those fans are a lot of those people are dreading sports talk right now.
Our Packer
are
fans,
Denver Bronco fans, and New England Packer or Green Bay Packer fans. So, you know, as long
like
as you're not one of
Jet,
them, you're doing pretty good.
Yeah, it could be like me, Jet fans.
Jets have fans?
Yes, we do. Yes, we are Jets. I'm a longtime sufferer. I'm a Jet Met fan.
Oh, I have to agree with you on the Mets, but, you know, the Jets, I bleed blue. It's well documented on the show that I definitely bleed the New York Giants blue, so.
Okay.
I'm having a hard time with anything with the Jets, but, you know, when you have Rex Ryan as your head coach, you know, he's always up to stick a foot in his mouth somewhere. So.
Yes, indeed.
Sorry, couldn't resist that one.
Yeah, that's all right. Well deserved. It is definitely well deserved.
That's going to be an interesting team next year to see what's going to happen with all the, you know, the kind of the backstabbing going on. The rookie McElroy and
yep,
it's a shame they got such a talented team. There's some really talented people. It's got to. I mean, I got to give them a little bit of a pass because they had two good seasons before this. You make the AFC Championship game. That's they didn't win, but they made it. There's a lot of teams that never make it, never mind,
yep,
you know.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll use free agency to its fullest, have a good draft, and, you know, get the ship uprighted.
Yeah.
Yeah, the biggest thing I see for the Jets is trying to figure out what's going on with Santonio Holmes, because that was just a complete nightmare at the end of the season for them. He just, I don't know, did he give up or what happened?
Who knows? Who knows what happened?
Yeah, exactly. I don't even think Santonio or Ryan know exactly what happened with that. All of a sudden, you know, you're looking at the game, and Holmes, when the last minute, is on the bench.
Yeah.
And
the announcers thought he was hurt. They said, Santonio Holmes is on the bench.
Yeah.
Then he had his helmet in his hand, he was talking, he was looking around, they go, he doesn't look hurt.
Because the
training
staff was around.
Rex Ryan claims he didn't know he was out of the game. How do you not know your number one receiver is not in the game? Are you watching the game?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's something wrong. Something wrong with that.
Exactly. But before we get more into NFL, NFL action, I should say, Gary here is a referee for local high school basketball in New Jersey area. Gary, why don't you give us a couple little tidbits of what goes on during these high school games? Because I'm sure it's a lot different than what people watch on TV with the pros. And for those that haven't gone to a high school game, it can be really exciting because these kids are playing their hearts out every day. So what kind of fun things have you experienced as a ref for these high school games in the Jersey Shore area?
Fun things? I guess the biggest issue is that that you run into it as an official is that people don't know the game. And so they'll be yelling stuff out and have no idea of what the real rule is or you know what's really happening, and you know and then part of it is also that a lot of it just comes down to angles. You know, I was doing a game earlier today, and play along the sidelines, ball went out of bounds, and I called it one way, and I was wrong. But what happened was the player from one team stepped in front, so I lost complete sight that he hit it against the guy from the other team. You know, so the coach gets all up in arms, and it's really a lot of fun though. I enjoy doing it. I don't take the stuff from the parents and the coaches and stuff too seriously. And you know, I do my game and I go home.
Yeah, that's what you got to do.
Do you catch a lot of stuff from the kids? Do the kids ever give you a lot of, you know, back talk, argue, you know, are they kind of pretty much told you don't argue with the ref?
They're supposed to be, but they kind of follow the coach's lead. If the coach is all over us, they figure it's okay for them to be all over us. I actually had a case last week. I was doing a grammar school game, and very close game. End of the game, there's about 12 seconds left. Kid drives the length of the court, and as he's driving, the coach yells, timeout. He goes up and scores the basket. I said, basket's no good. Coach called timeout. The coach shouldn't have a problem with that, you know. So they get the ball back. There's 6 seconds left. Take a shot. They miss it. The kid gets a rebound and shuffles his feet. So I call a travel, and then the kid scores. That would have tied the game, sending it to overtime, the whole deal. And, pandemonium broke out. But so we go in, you know, the other official and I go in to get changed. And not a big deal because you run into that stuff. But as we're leaving, one of the kids walks by and bumps the two of us. You know? If he just bumped one of us, I said, okay, you know, it was an accident or whatever. But, you know, he bumped the two of us. And I just, you know, so I called the coach over. And the coach made the kid apologize. I got an email from the principal over the weekend saying, the coach told us about the situation. We have called the boy's parents in. He's been suspended from the team. We're sorry the incident happened. So that's the other side of the whole coin.
Well, that's good that the school actually stepped up and took responsibility and did something. You know, not only did the coach not pull a Penn State and not report it, but when he did report, the principal actually did something about it, and you know that actually gives me a little bit of I have to give credit to that school. I don't know what school it is, and it doesn't really need to be mentioned, but at the same time, you know, it's good to know that some institutions are taking responsibility and trying to do the right thing by the kids.
I wrote back to the principal. I said thanks. I said, I didn't mean for the kid to get suspended. I said, he made a mistake and he owed up to it. I said rather than suspend him, have him sit on the bench, but don't let him play. Because then, if he's not there, he can always say, "Well, I was sick" or whatever. If he's there and sitting there, people can say, "Well, how come you didn't play? How come you didn't play?" And now he's got to own up to it.
Yeah, he's got to admit to what happened, yeah.
Plus, it'll be tougher for him to sit there and be on the sideline watching that game.
Exactly, yeah.
Otherwise, he'd be home playing video games and wouldn't really feel the pressure. If he's there, especially if it's a good kid and it's a close game, and, he kind of let his teammates down,
Yeah, well, that was my feeling on that. And I said, thank you for whatever action you take on it. It's nice. It's nice to know that, the officials are being backed, because a lot of places they aren't. Especially you do some of these tournaments and stuff, AAU and stuff, the stuff on weekends, not the regular school stuff. And they're just money-making things, and the organizations don't back the officials at all, because the coaches are paying, the teams are paying to play.
Right.
Basically. So, but it is what it is. But I enjoy doing it, and when I go to a basketball game, I'm yelling at the officials. I'm a big college basketball fan. My son's the head manager up at Seton Hall University, so I get up to see a lot of their games, and I'll be yelling, "How can you make that call?" And then sit back and say, I'm sitting here and I can see it, but where he is, he's got 10, guys who are, 6'5" running around in front of him. How the hell can he see anything down there? So you get to be a little hypocritical, I guess.
Yeah, sometimes you almost want the rep to be in the press box so they can actually get the bird's eye view.
Yep.
Now, I got one last question just before we get into the NFL talk for the past weekend, and that is it pertains to parents. Now, you see all and you hear about this all over the news all the time about how, especially in like Little League baseball games and Pop Warner football games and such, how the parents just will start going crazy on the sidelines and going over and either assaulting the referees or the umpires. Have you ever seen anything like that happen in one of your games doing high school basketball?
Parents can get crazy, but I'll take it back to when I first started officiating any sport. I used to do Little League baseball. okay? And I started doing Little League Baseball when I was 13. And here I was 13 years old, I was doing a game, and it was like a 12, major leagues, 12-year-olds. And I'm behind the plate doing the game, and the parents were all over me, and I cleared the bleachers. And this is going back, 40-some-odd years ago. So, you know, it's not something new. And I bring that up because, you know, everybody says, well, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. I said, no, it's just getting more and more publicized.
Yeah,
right.
This stuff has always gone on, and, you know, and whether it's the parents at the games or kids getting in trouble or kids, you know, bullying and all this stuff. I said, it's not, in my mind, it's not getting worse. It's just getting more publicized and more brought out, you know, more brought out into the open. And, you know, which I guess is the good part about it.
I played Little League. When I was 12, I was involved in a game that I've never seen this happen before. It was our town had a north side and a south side, and you played on your side of town during the season, except for like two or three games in the middle, you kind of crossed over. Then there was you'd have a tournament with both sides of town, and it came down to a double elimination, and we had no losses, and we were playing on the other side of town, the south side of town. And the umpires were all parents, not only from the south side of town, but they were parents of the kids that were on the team we were playing. Our coach had a major – I didn't think the game was even going to get started. We agreed to play, and it wasn't even a very good job of them trying to, you know, do the home cooking deal.
Right.
It got so out of hand. There was an argument. Our coach – and the coach of the other team came out onto the field, were arguing, like, and they started to grab each other. Now, somebody had called the police, luckily, earlier. The police got there before fists started flying.
Yeah.
Now you've got the bleachers full of people from the south side. Our bleachers are full. You got three squad cars pulling up, separating everybody, getting everybody off the field, squaring, you know, just trying to keep peace.
Yep.
And then they ended up winning the game. The next day we played winner take all, because now we each had a loss.
Right.
They had a squad car parked behind each bleacher. Both coaches were not allowed in the dugout. And they brought in regular, instead of having the parents, they brought in regular paid for like umpires from Middlesex County, not even from our county, to do this game. And they lined everybody up and they said, if there's one word from any of you kids, there's no tolerance, one word, and you're out. And myself and two other guys on our team and three guys on their team had already gotten warnings because we said a few things we shouldn't have said during the mayhem on the field.
Yeah.
So it was, I mean, and the crowd, it was a decent-sized crowd the first game. This game, I've never seen a crowd at a game, at a Little League game, other than, you know, on TV, Little League World Series, to see this game.
Yeah, but in all of that, it stayed in the town, and that was it, right? Nowadays, with everybody with their video, you know, with their video cameras and their phones and stuff, it's all over the net, you know, all over the internet and stuff. You know, there was no internet back then.
Yeah.
Or it was the old, the old dial-up stuff. So, it didn't get publicized, but you know, you brought up a good point about officials and bringing in regular certified officials. A lot of the towns down here have recreation programs, and I'll go back when my boys were playing, when they first started playing, they would just have high school kids referee, and the coaches would bully these kids, and the parents would get all over these kids. And, you know, they would pay these kids, you know, $5 a game, $10 a game, whatever it was. But it got so bad that they had to bring in certified referees at $35 or $40 a game. And then people say, well, you know, why are our budgets so high? Well, it's because people act like idiots.
Yeah.
Can't let recreation be what it's supposed to be. It's recreation. It's not win at all costs.
Right.
I saw that when I coached my son when he played soccer in rec and traveling. And it was some of the games are unbelievable. I mean, the parents are just like, and they're warned, And they're told before the season starts, you know, any you got a like a code of honor, they called it. You can't be saying certain things, and
yep.
it got ugly sometimes.
Soccer, I find is the worst. One of my boys played soccer, one played basketball, and I found the soccer to be the worst. The best sport to officiate, I officiate girls lacrosse, and girls lacrosse is great because nobody knows the rules.
I was just going to say, I like a lot of sports, and that's one sport, and I've watched it because my brother's two kids both played it in high school, and I went to watch, and that was the only game I can honestly say I stood there and I couldn't figure out the rules.
Yeah, boys lacrosse is kind of physical. Girls lacrosse, there's absolutely no contact allowed at all. And that's really the only thing that you have to watch out for is that nobody hits each other and, you know, they don't get the stick too close to the head.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a good exercise and nobody yells at you because nobody knows if you're right or wrong.
Yeah.
Including
I do have to admit, I when I coached soccer, when my son was 9, I did get a red card one time.
Oh.
Yeah, I used to coach bitty basketball, the Little League basketball here in Tom's River, and yeah, I've gotten thrown out of quite a few games myself as a coach.
That's why I don't coach no more. Well, my son's too big now, but I say, you know what, this isn't worth it.
Yeah. And I still hold the town record for getting thrown for technical fouls in the game and getting kicked out of games as a player. So, you know, every once in a while I'll contact the league and see if my record's still intact. And to this day, it's been over 20 years and it's still intact.
Ah, okay. One to be proud of, huh?
Exactly. It's like the Happy Gilmore. You know, I hold the record for taking my – I was the only
yeah.
player to take my skate off and stab someone with it.
Stab him with my skate, yeah.
But on that note, I think it's time to move on to the NFL.
Okay. And I'm going to sign off here. I actually didn't watch any of the games this weekend.
Oh, you missed good ones.
Yeah, I was refereeing all weekend, so –
Oh, you missed
I missed the games. I caught the end of the Giants game, but that was about it. And the only thing I had to say about that was the horrible blow to the head call.
Oh,
yeah.
God, that was awful.
In the fourth quarter.
That was just disturbing.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was one of the two calls that cost the Giants a touchdown. Luckily, it didn't matter in the long run.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You had the other one with the the fumble that they said.
Yes.
Oh my! Those I know you missed referees missed calls, but that was.
But that went to a review.
That went to a review. Yeah. That's what was even more crazy.
Yeah,
right. And the whole thing is, you know, I understand refs miss calls. I understand, you know, things happen, but you don't want the refs to change the complexion of a game by making certain calls, especially
right.
when you talk big game like that. And
yeah.
those two calls could have very easily changed the complexion.
Sure.
So, and then, you know, they could have thrown a flag on Umanyoras when he came across the line and knocked the ball out of Rogers' hand when they had Jennings going down the sideline wide open, which
yeah.
would have been another touchdown. They very easily could have called a flag on that one on the Giants for roughing the passer. Because after he fumbled, well, not really roughing the passer, because once the ball's out of his hand, he's fair game, but... You know, anything could happen, and there was like a couple other things that they could have called on that the announcers were talking about during the game, and that one was one that they actually did good on. So,
yeah.
How do you feel about the replay in sports, Gary? Like, do you like the replays, or do you think it kind of undermines like the officials?
Well, I think it's good because everybody else sees the replay.
Yeah.
So, you know, if a ref makes a call one way and you know, they're showing it 100 times on TV and they've made the wrong call, now you say, okay, well, he made the wrong call. How come they can't be corrected? You know, and they do a pretty good job keeping it in reason on what can be reviewed and what can't be reviewed. You know, I know in basketball there's certain things they can review, whether it's a three-point shot or not, timing issues they can review. You know, obviously they can't review a foul, just like they can't review a penalty in football.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be interesting to see if they ever really start using it in baseball.
I know people say, well, back in the old days, we didn't have replay. But, you know, the guys are so much bigger and faster, and things happen.
Well,
that, so
back
fast,
in the old days, you didn't have 14 cameras pointed at every play either. So.
Yeah.
So that, you know, and, once again, you can go back to, you know, our conversation before where it's things are just publicized so much more now. And, you know, the media is just looking for stuff to show.
Because
there's so
many
media outlets, everybody's looking for that special thing.
I was just talking with some friends at work today, and, like, the way it seems like when I watch football now, especially the playoff games, not so much the regular season, I'm watching it, and I got my laptop there because I'm Facebooking, and it's almost like interactive. The game is almost like interactive. There were so many people on Sunday watching that Giant-Packer game. There must have been about a dozen and a half people.
Yeah.
That I know from here, from, you know, down in Florida, and it was almost like you're watching the game with a dozen extra people, because
yep.
everybody's commenting. All the people who wanted the Packers, all the people who wanted the Giants, and it's with the social media, it's like a party, like a football party online.
Yeah, that's not even including like Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which is, you know, people are on their phones or whatever, just tweeting or whatever.
Ocho Cinco tweets in the huddle sometimes, so that's really interactive. I'm getting the ball.
Yeah. Yeah, all the defensive corner has to do is wait for his tweets to come out and you know what play is coming.
Yeah. Well, yeah, time for his account. Be a follower, you know.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we just move on right now? We'll... Gary, first things first, I wanted to say thank you to you for sticking around for a little Dreaded Sports Talk action, and thanks for taking part in Ship to Shore. I've heard a couple little snippets of your music, and it sounds really good. I'm going to have to check some of that out on Reverb Nation later on when I have some time. And the only thing that I do have to say is, you know, you need to give, like, a real Jersey Shore song. I heard the Jersey Shore song, but there was no mention of, like, Snooki or the situation in it. Come on.
Well, that's not the real Jersey Shore, though.
Exactly. Thank you for saying that.
Well, thank you for having me on, and enjoy the rest of your show. And I will be talking to you. Ken, I'll see you on Saturday.
I'll see you Saturday. Yeah, thanks a lot for coming on, Gary.
Okay, take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. With that on, why don't we start off with one of the best games of the weekend. Now, this game was absolutely incredible. I'm not a fan of either team, but I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. I was even jumping up and down, and I'll be honest with you, if I was a fan of one of these two teams, I think I would have had a heart attack. As I'm talking about, the 49ers went over the Saints. They won 36-32. Wow. You know, it was a defensive game for the first 3.5 quarters, and all of a sudden, with 4 minutes left, the offensive floodgates opened up. With 4 lead changes in the last 4 minutes, Alex Smith not only showed that he can play, but he ran the ball. I mean, that option play around the left side was absolutely incredible. I was looking at it going, okay, who has the ball? Who has the ball? Who has the ball?
Yeah, I didn't even see it.
He's at the 5-yard line, and he scored a touchdown. I'm like, holy shit, where did this happen?
Tim Tebow should watch that.
Exactly.
That was unbelievable. I was rooting for the Saints only because, you know, my allegiance to Drew Brees, but it was... You know, that was a phenomenal game.
Yeah, I was definitely rooting for the Niners because, you know, it's well documented. I'm a Giants fan, and I really did not want to go into New Orleans and play. I knew that would just be a losing battle. And even though the 49ers are an excellent team, probably the best defensive team in football right now, they're not New Orleans. They're not a team that, you know, regularly puts up 40 points a game. You don't have to worry about getting into a shootout with them every single week. This week was, you know, an anomaly. San Francisco doesn't do this kind of stuff. They played out of character, and you know what? They did what they had to do to win. And you can't fault them for that. But what I say is, and I've been saying it for a long time, well, I'm going to change it just a little bit because my vote is Jim Harbaugh for president. What this guy has done with this team, basically taking the same team that was around last year that was not even a playoff team and turning them into the number 2 seed, beating the Saints in the divisional round and now hosting the NFC Championship game with the winner going to the Super Bowl. It's just absolutely incredible the turnaround that he's done with this team in his first year.
Yeah, it's basically the same team. Going from that record to this record, it's incredible.
Yep, and you know the two biggest turnarounds that I've seen, or actually you got to say there's three big turnarounds. One is the defense. The defense is just absolutely incredible. Two is Alex Smith. The kid actually is finally playing with some confidence. He's been through something like six or seven offensive coordinators in just as many years. And now he's playing with fire. He's playing with spirit. You know, you could actually look at him and say after this year, well, okay, now I can kind of see why he was the number one overall pick. And two, and finally, you got Vernon Davis.
Yeah.
He was just unstoppable last week. You know, you're talking about a guy that 2 years ago was asked to leave the field by the coach because he didn't want him hurting anybody else, just taking anybody else down. He's, you know, just go to the locker room and sit and watch the game there because you're better off. To a guy that's, you know, an integral part of a team. It's just absolutely amazing what a coach and what a team's mindset can do.
That's going to be a good game on Sunday.
Yeah, it should. But let's move on to first things first. Before we move on here, now, do you think that the Saints' road woes did it? We all know that they're a dome team and that they're a team built on speed and built on timing. Now, how much did playing on the road on natural surface have to do with it? Is it just the Saints collapse, in your opinion? Or not collapse, but there are just road woes? Or is it, you know, something that just San Francisco is just that good of a team?
Well, I think the offense, they still put up in the 30s. It was not quite what they do at home. I think there is a difference on the grass. It slows them down a bit. I don't think it's a major difference. I mean, they were going against probably one of the best defenses left in the playoffs, maybe in the playoffs. I mean, if you look at the Saints, the Packers, their defenses aren't that good. The Texans had a good defense. It's just a shame that Schaub got hurt. The Patriot defense is awful. I mean, they didn't get exposed because they played Tebow, but I don't know how much they'll get exposed this week because the Raven offense is non-existent recently, too.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was a combination of the grass. Because that grass out in San Francisco, right by the bay, it's always wet.
Yep.
I remember when the Giants played, the infield was always wet.
Exactly. And you saw that with Darren Sproles. He had three or four times he slipped. He had blood going on the cut, and his feet just went out from under him.
They just went straight out from underneath him. And I think if that game was in the dome, you know, that they're obviously a different team there. They climate control, the ground's dry. They can use their speed. I've seen Darren Sproles cut. He could be going one direction. He could stop on a dime, cut, and go back the other way when they're playing on the turf. He tried that in San Francisco, and like you said, you're right, two or three times his feet just went out from under him.
Yeah,
now, it's the same for both teams, but Pittsburgh, San Francisco really isn't a speed team. If you take out Crabtree, you know, that's him and Vernon Davis that are big weapons, and they're not real. Vernon Davis is in the speed, so Crabtree has got some speed. You know, Frank Gore's not a total bolt of lightning. He's just a good shifty runner, strong.
Right.
So the thick, wet field doesn't hurt them at all.
Right. And now we shall move on to the debacle. You know, after this game, after watching the 49ers Saints game, I was all excited for a great game with the Patriots and the Broncos, and it was just, absolutely horrible. Tim Tebow just decided to not show up. The Patriots defense did what they needed to do. They just stymied this kid, made him look like he didn't even belong on the field. You could have brought somebody out of the stands to do a better job. I'm surprised that Brady Quinn, is it Brady Quinn? Yeah, Brady Quinn. I'm surprised they didn't put him in the second half because...
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was sitting on the bench and Tebow couldn't do anything. And, you know, the Patriots' defense has not been getting credit all season long. They've been, you know, everyone's saying, oh, they're a horrible defense. They're a horrible defense. They got one of the worst defenses in the league. But, yes, okay, yardage-wise, yes. But at the same time, if you look at scoring defense, they were like 14th in the league in scoring. And that's what counts. You could put up, I don't care if you rush and pass for 1,000 yards, if you score 10 points, you're still going to lose. You know, a game is not won and lost on yards. It is not won and lost on first downs. It's won and lost on points. And the Patriots don't give up the points, and they just continue that with the 45-10 drubbing this week.
They did a good job of scheming a defense to stop that second option, where he fakes to the fullback or gives it to the fullback, runs to the right, either keeps it or pitches it to McGahee. They always had a man on McGahee. McGahee had success running up the middle on him, but when they tried that option, they were disciplined, and somebody stayed at home, watched McGahee, so they cut off the pitch man, and that left Tebow, I think the longest run he had might have been just a few yards, you know, on that
right.
play, on that particular play, because there was somebody on there. They had that well-defensed.
Yep. Yeah, well, they knew what to expect because they had just played him a few weeks earlier, and they saw what happened in the first quarter when Denver opened up the lead, and then they shifted and decided to, they said, we're going to stop the option. We'll let him beat us with his arm. We'll let him beat us however else, but we're stopping the option. We can't let them run all over us like that. And they did this. They did that from minute one this week, and it worked. It absolutely worked. Plus, you know, Brady looking as sharp as – Tom Brady I'm talking about looking as sharp as ever with 5 touchdowns and 5 drives in the first half, and you can't get away from the two-headed tight end monster that they got. You know, Gronkowski and Hernandez are just – that's something that I've never, in all my years of watching football, I've never seen anything like that, where you have two tight ends that are just that good on one team.
Gronkowski had 145 yards. Hernandez had 55 yards receiving, but he had 61 yards. He had 5 rushes. They used
yeah.
him kind of as an H-back and actually gave him the ball. He had a 43-yard run. He had 61 yards rushing in total, and combined with his receiving yards, it was up over 100.
Right. And you put someone that size as your running back, and he's hard to stop. It's like literally Brandon Jacobs.
Well, he turns upfield, has his shoulders square to the line,
yep.
and has momentum going. And I feel sorry for the safety of the cornerback that's trying to get in front and stop him.
Yeah. You know, the only thing that can stop a runner like that, that's that size, is himself. If he hesitates, if he jukes, if he breaks his momentum, or he doesn't square his shoulders to the line, that's the only thing that can stop him. And you got to tackle with the legs, and the Broncos just weren't doing that. And that's how he was breaking off these monster runs. And you know, I give New England credit for they did what they have to do. They're winning games. They're looking like a true team. They're playing like a true number one seed should be playing right now.
I think they'll beat the Ravens on Sunday because the Raven offense has just dried up.
Oh, what Raven offense? And speaking of that, you know, they beat the Texans 20-13. Now, of that 20 points, 7 of them were given to them on a punt fumble that they recovered on the 4-yard line. So they really didn't have to do anything. And their other touchdown was scored off another turnover that they only had to go like 11 yards. So if you're going to give a team the ball with 10 yards to go and you give up 14 points there and you can only score 13, you can't really do anything. And, you know, that has to be credited to the Ravens defense right there because they wouldn't let anybody do anything. Foster had a pretty decent game. He was running the ball well, but if you can't pass, you know, in the second half, what were they doing? They're just keying on the run because T.J. Yates couldn't do anything.
He had 132 yards and a touchdown. Andre Johnson had a big game. He had no touchdowns, but 111 yards.
Yep, he just didn't have any yak. As soon as he was catching the ball, they were knocking him down.
It was the fumble. They went down, got the field goal to start the game, and then when Jacoby Jones fumbled that punt on the 4-yard line, that was the game. It was 20-13 at 7 points right there. And Rackers missed a field goal that hit hit the crossbar.
Yep.
Another 4 inches, and that might have, it probably would have hit it and skittered over instead of, you know, going down.
Bouncing back. Yeah, and like you said, you mentioned earlier about Flacco not doing too well, and that's going to be a key, I think, to this week's game with the Patriots, and we'll get more to that, you know, in a little while. But, you know, Flacco did not play that well. He really could not move the ball. Now, granted, Houston has a great defense, but, you know, Anquan Boldin, once again, they were making connections. Boldin was catching passes, but at the same time, he wasn't getting anywhere after the catch. And that's Bolden's bread and butter. And just like Andre Johnson's, you know, he catches a 10-yard pass and runs it for 60. So if you're not letting anybody do that, you know, that's a big, big key. And that's something that the Patriots are going to have to look into, is making sure that they don't let Boldin loose in that secondary. Plus, you got to worry about Ray Rice. And you can never forget about a little running back like that, even though he didn't really have that good of a game on Sunday.
Yeah, 21 for 60, but his long was only 9 yards.
Right, but now here's the other thing. Yeah, Rice did not do that good, but I saw that they had, what's his name? Ricky Williams was playing pretty well.
He was 6 for 27, but I swear I saw him on that field more than 6 carries.
Yeah,
I thought
too.
He carried way more than that. I was thinking Rice got hurt because I said, what is this? Ricky Williams is playing a lot.
Yeah, did Williams have any receptions?
No. Rice had 4 for 20. Ricky Williams didn't have any. A lot of fumbles in this game if you look at them. The Ravens have 3, and he had 3 from the Texans, plus the 3 picks from Yates.
Wow. Yeah, that's... When you're turning the ball over that many times, you just can't expect to win. And, you know, it was a somewhat exciting game because it was a close finish. But at the same time, when teams are playing that sloppy, it's hard to really get into the game and watch close unless you're a big fan of either team.
It's a shame. I know injuries are part of the game, but if Matt Schaub was playing, they Texans would have won that game handily.
Oh, the way it was, yeah, without a doubt. I do have to agree with that, but, you know.
It has. That's part of the game.
Yep, exactly. And speaking of part of the game, let's talk about the injuries that happened, well, to the Packers' pride by losing 37-20 to the New York Giants. Now, which do you think was the bigger key? I'm going to give you 3 choices here and go off on it, please. One, was the layoff. Not only did they have the bye week, but basically everyone on the Packers team was sat the last week of the season. 2, the Giants defense that really stepped up in the second half. Or 3, Mike Philbin's death. You know, son of Joe Philbin, their Packers offensive coordinator, who wasn't even with the team up until the day before the game. Which one of those 3, or any combination, do you think was the key to the Packers just not performing up to par?
I say it was a combination of the defense and the layoff. Because when you're playing hot and you have that week off, a lot of teams don't like that bye week, especially when they're playing well. It just breaks momentum. It breaks your total preparation. Because you go from that first preseason game in August, you play the next week. And like you said, they rested a lot of guys in that last game of the season. So a lot of these guys had a lot of time off.
Yeah, almost 3 weeks.
And apparently some of them were shooting commercials. You know, they might have lost some focus. Also, the Giant defense had players back that weren't there the first time they played. Umeniora, Tuck, Michael
right.
Boley. They were on the offensive side. Bradshaw was back. You know, there was a lot of guys back that weren't there in that first game. So I think combination of the defense coming together, they're finally healthy, and then playing as a team. Don't forget, this team lost a lot of secondary players in the first 2 weeks of preseason.
Yep. Yeah, with Mukamara going down for over half the year, and who else was it? Terrell Thomas.
Yeah.
Went out for the season. Both, you know, you got your starting safety and your backup safety going down, or your backup cornerback going down within a week of each other before the season even starts. And whew. And luckily, Amukamara came back because during the game there was a couple injuries and he had to step up. I think it was Aaron Ross went down during the game. Then they brought him in for concussion.
I'm not sure if he's back or not. I got to try and find out. But tomorrow's Wednesday. The injury report comes out tomorrow.
Yep. Now, I know it's been talked about to death, and I have to bring this up. How horrible was the officiating in this game? I mean, there was two calls that just showed that I think the officials had to have money on the game or were getting paid off or something. The first was the fumble that was not a fumble that led to 7 points for the Packers. That was reviewed. The ball was obviously out or coming. It wasn't fully out, but it was coming out. He did not have complete possession of the ball while his body was in midair. And the second was the mysterious blow to the head in the second half that was on a fourth down play that gave the Packers new life right there. I mean, come on, guys. You want the officials to be part of the game, and yes, you understand that mistakes happen, but when you're making big mistakes like that that could change the complexion of the game, something has to be looked at by the NFL.
The blow to the head happened quick. It was a horrible, horrible call. The one that got me was the fumble. Because, they, like you said before, they went under the hood. They actually went under and looked at it. And they see the same video feed. It's the same thing that we're seeing on TV. And it was clearly, I don't have to be a trained NFL official, nor did the broadcasters to the game. They were in as much shock as the people were. That they call that, you miss a call when you go under the hood, is just completely ridiculous.
Exactly.
I can see the blow to the head because it happens quick. I mean, it was a horrible call. The referee might have been at a bad angle, might have looked worse to him than it was. I could possibly see that happening, but when you go under that just undermines the whole replay system. If you're going to stop the game for 3 to 4 minutes and go under the hood and try and get the call right and come out and still get it wrong, then maybe we don't need the replay if you're going to do that.
Yeah, mistakes happen, but when you're looking at it, I mean, in slow motion, you can go frame by frame by frame. There's no excuse for getting a call wrong. No excuse.
And they blow it up. You can see it on TV. They blow the picture up. You could see the space between the ground and his knee. He wasn't down. The ball was out well before he hit the ground.
Yep. And both those plays led to touchdowns by the Packers.
Yeah. Luckily, I mean, I guess it was a kind of a payback in a way, because then right after that fumble, that's when the Giants got the Hail Mary at the half. So I guess that was like a little bit of a payback, you know?
Yeah, that was that. In my opinion, that was kind of like a death blow to go from going down at the half by 3 points to going down by 10 points. You know, that's a huge difference, especially when you have just a Hail Mary. I mean, literally, it was Eli just threw that ball up and hoped someone would come down with it. And
you very seldom see that play work. And when he came down with that ball, I was the most shocked guy. I go, oh my god, I can't believe he caught that.
Yeah, I couldn't either. And it was kind of like a little reminiscent of a couple years back with the ball against the helmet.
Yeah, David Tyree.
Exactly. I mean, it wasn't as spectacular, but at the same time, for to go up and get a ball like that in a crowd, you know, you got to give Nick's a little bit of credit for making that catch, because he just it absolutely floored me as well. I couldn't believe it. I was literally hoping that, you know, Eli would just throw the ball to sidelines, get within, you know, get another 10, 15 yards, and let Times kick a field goal and go up by 6. Well, Times had his chance to kick a field goal, but it was more like an extra point.
Yeah. It seems like, you know, on that Hail Mary play, they say, well, maybe you catch it, the batted ball, you catch it, or you get the pass interference. I don't think I've ever seen, and I can remember, the pass interference being called, because I think the officials look for that. They know it's a crapshoot. The ball's up there. You got 4 to 5 guys, maybe 6 guys jumping up in a group. It's virtually impossible to call a pass interference unless somebody just visibly grabs the face mask and yanks the receiver's head or something. It very seldom works.
Right.
They were very lucky.
Right, and pass interference cannot be called if someone's going for the ball. You're allowed to make contact with the receiver if the defender's going for the ball, trying to make a play on it, trying to catch it. And that's pretty much why you don't see that, because everyone in that situation is jumping up trying to catch the ball, and it's whoever jumps up high enough.
Yeah.
But let's move on to we got about a few minutes left here, so we're going to speed through this. Just want to go off on a couple little coaching changes that have happened. Well, one, Jim Caldwell is out in Indianapolis. The changing of the guard continues, and I'm not worried about why Caldwell. We all know why Caldwell's gone. It's because the new general manager basically wants to bring his guys in. And the question I have is, what does this mean for Peyton? You know, the team did not exercise their option on him. They got a delay on that. Do you think he will be back now with the possibility of a new head coach coming into Indy?
At first, when people were talking about this, I thought, yeah, he'll be back. He'll play another year or two. Andrew Luck will sit behind him like Aaron Rodgers did behind Favre. But this option they owe him is a lot of money. And I'm thinking they might not. They have other spots in that team that need attention. And instead
right.
of giving him 20-something million, they could patch up the defense because, you know, they lost a lot of games this year, but Peyton Manning didn't play defense, and the defense gave up a lot of points.
Well, they've never had a good defense.
You got Freeney, you know, the good pass rusher, but that's about it on the defense. They need to build around him, and they got to do it quick because he's not that young anymore either. So instead
exactly.
of paying Peyton Manning that kind of money, you know, they might just get this kid, let him learn, you know, on the fire. He's a big kid. He's a smart kid. You know, I know the NFL is different than playing at Stanford, but they do run a pro offense, a pro set at Stanford. So it wouldn't be like he's an option quarterback coming in trying to learn something new.
Right.
I think you draft and you sign some free agents, use that money elsewhere to build the team instead of, you know, because they're going to have to pay Luck a lot of money. Then you're going to have a lot of your salary cap money tied up in two quarterbacks.
Yep. And the worst part is they can't – if they pay Peyton that $28 million option, that's their only way to get anything for him. Because he's a free agent if they don't pay that option.
Yeah.
So they basically have to let him go and get nothing for him or pay the $28 million option and then trade him away and hope they can get $28 million worth of – players out of him, which, you know, with a guy who had three neck surgeries that you don't know if he's going to make it through next year, who's going to give
up
risk
that? At his age, you know, the neck surgery.
Yep.
And he's going to want to go to a team, like there were rumors about him coming to the Jets. He wouldn't come to the Jets, first of all, even before all the turmoil. But the offensive line at the Jets is like a sieve.
Right.
So he got a guy with a bad neck. I think he's 36 or 37. He wanted to come to the Jets and risk that injury. He's going to look for a team that's a quarterback away from maybe being a championship contender. Not, I mean, the Jets have other holes, too. The defense is way overrated, not as good as they said it was going to be. You know, the whole offense is in a state of flux because are they gonna keep Santonio Holmes? You know, he's bashing Sanchez. Now you got the other kid, the rookie quarterback, he actually said Holmes wasn't the only guy that quit or didn't care about the team, just his stats. He literally said there were guys in that room that as long as they had a good game or put up their numbers, were happy, and that the team winning or losing was secondary.
Well, yeah, those are contract players right there. Those are the type of people you just don't need on a team, especially a team in turmoil like Indy was this year.
Yeah.
Yep, but now Jeff Fisher signed as the new head coach for this St. Louis Rams. Is that a good choice for Fisher? Because we know that he had the option to go into Miami as well, and he chose St. Louis over Miami. My opinion is Sam Bradford was the reason why he did this. Because we all know that Matt Moore is not the future of the quarterback position in Miami. And Jeff Fisher, it's much easier for him to build a team around someone like Sam Bradford than it is Matt Moore. And I think that was the big deciding factor, in my opinion. What's your take on that, Ken?
Yeah, because it was Matt Moore took over for Chad Henne, and they don't have a quarterback there. Bradford's a young guy. They have a solid offensive line, too. The offensive line was built with a lot of draft picks. You have Steven Jackson. You got a premier running back. They need to beef up the wide receiver core a little bit, but the possibilities are much better there than over in Miami.
Exactly. And finally, we got the coaching carousel. The Dolphins have theoretically narrowed their list down to three candidates. Broncos offensive coordinator Mike McCoy. Todd Bowles, who replaced Brando during the season and ended up going 2-1 as the interim head coach. And Packers offensive coordinator Joe Philbin. Who do you think would be the best fit in Miami right now?
Oh, in Miami. I would say Philbin. They need an offense. The defense isn't awful. I think they need an offensive coach in there. You have some weapons. You got Brandon Marshall. Reggie Bush really came on. The other running back's name is Thomas. Not Devin Thomas. His last name is Thomas, a rookie. They just drafted him.
Yeah.
I the offensive line is pretty good. I think you need to get something out of that. I don't know what the free agent situation is for quarterbacks, but you can't go with Matt Moore or Chad Henne. You gotta either hope for free agency or
trade up for Blake Griffin. Robert Griffin.
Yeah.
That would probably be their best case scenario is to be able to. I'm not sure where they lie in the draft off the top of my head, but I know they're towards the bottom. But if they could move up to get someone like Robert Griffin III and have Joe Philbin as coach, because obviously he knows how to build a quarterback because he did it with Aaron Rodgers. And
yeah.
You saw what Matt Flynn did in his one time out. So Philbin knows what he's doing with offense. I think he would also be the best person for the position there. But we got just a few minutes left here for the Hour Grounded Sports Talk. We're not going to get big into the championship games, but let's just go through just a quick predictions here. We got the Ravens at the Patriots. I don't have the line sitting in front of me. Who do you think is going to be taking this game, Ken?
I think the Patriots. Based on what I've seen from the Ravens, the offense is just horrible. And the defense is okay, but it's beatable. And I think if Ed Reed is out, because he got pretty banged up in that game, and he's, like I said, waiting for the injury reports tomorrow, you got to find people to cover Gronkowski, Hernandez, and Wes Welker.
And stop the run.
I think stop the run. And then Brady will go occasionally. Deion Branch has got his share of touchdowns this year.
Right.
So you got four guys. You got three main guys and a fourth guy you have to watch, because I think he's the beneficiary of the defense is looking at the two tight ends and Welker. And a lot of times he's running free. There's nobody even near him.
Exactly. And I'm going to go with the Ravens. I'm going the opposite way only because the Patriots are yet to beat a team over 500 this year, and I just don't think it's going to continue. I think that the Ravens' defense will be strong enough to step up and do what it is. Real quick, let's get your take on the Giants game. Giants 49ers?
I'm going to take the Giants, and not just because I'm a Giant fan. I think they're playing as sharp as they've been in a long time. The defense is healthy, and the San Francisco offense doesn't really scare me. The Giants do a good job against the run, so I think they can keep Gore in check. And as long as they can keep Vernon Davis and Crabtree from going wild, and they don't really go wild. They don't have a history. They're not the Packers. They're not Finley
right.
and Jennings and Jordy Nelson.
Yep. I'm going to go with the Giants also. Once again, not because I'm a Giants fan, but because this is the healthiest this team has been. They're playing with passion. They're playing with emotion. And the only thing that can stop this team right now is themselves. If they got to keep their mouth shut. You got to keep Antro Roll and Victor Cruz from giving billboard material for the 49ers, if they can do that and they sit there and practice and do what they need to do with what they've done the last 4 weeks, they should have no problem, or they're going to have problems because the 49ers are a great team and they do scare me. But at the same time, they're playing the best. Their defense is absolutely incredible, and Eli is right on top. But on that note, thanks for another listen to another episode of Dreaded Sports Talk. Thank you, Ken from Jersey, and thank you to Gary Phillips for chiming in. Once again, I'm Evil Rob, and we will see you next week. Peace.
Good night, everybody.